Dr. Carlo Irwin Pinello, in addition to his medical degree, has a master's degree in economics. Both were from the University of the Philippines. He currently works at the University of the Philippines as an associate professor in clinical epidemiology in their College of Medicine. He's involved with implementing universal health care in the Philippines as well. He serves as a deputy chief of a USAID-funded health policy development program. Welcome.
Good morning. I'm going to share a study we did in the Philippines on quality of care. So this is essentially a paper that was derived from a much larger study led by Drs. Peabody and Solon. So while we are on track of meeting our Millennium Development Goal for reducing child mortality, it remains at risk primarily because of persistently high neonatal mortality rates. It hasn't essentially changed between 2008 and 2011. And this overall health system weakness is further validated by increase in maternal mortality rates. As you can observe, we're going the opposite way from 162 to 221. People would tend to argue that it may be an issue of sampling, it may be an issue of methodology, but our statistical bureau says they've essentially implemented the same methodology used in 2008 and, in fact, even added more samples, which leads me to conclude that the 2011 numbers are even more robust than our 2006 numbers, and we're in the red. Not only that, wide variance in both outcomes, child and maternal mortality, exists across areas and income groups, particularly biased against the poor and in poorer areas. In certain localities, like the autonomous region of in Muslim Mindanao, maternal mortality rates actually look like that of sub-Saharan Africa, while areas, for example, that are relatively more affluent have better numbers. Interestingly, though, high maternal mortality and child mortality registers even in highly urbanized centers like Metro Manila. And we postulate that the reason for that is because poverty is concentrated there. It means that while healthcare is essentially available, transportation is there, etc., the poor still couldn't get to where appropriate care should be. In 2010, the Philippine government introduced a universal healthcare initiative that builds on close to 20 years of continuous health reform implementation. But it introduced universal health care primarily because it realized that while policies have been issued, systems have been changed, and health funding has been steadily increasing, the benefits of health reform haven't really benefited the poor. And so universal health care in 2010 started introducing interventions like enrolling 5.3 million poor households, upgrading more than 2,000 government health facilities, and focusing public health interventions in 12 areas that account for 30% of where the poor are mostly located. And it's these three main interventions that actually sort of drive the universal healthcare initiative back home. So as it rolls out its universal healthcare initiative, it becomes critical for the Philippine government to actually determine which interventions to put money in, given that resources are not really that much. So this paper has three main objectives. First is to document the effects of poverty on the health of children, to determine the protective effects of health insurance, as well as to determine the protective effects of quality of care. Based on literature, there's growing evidence on the protective effects of health insurance and quality of care on poverty. And some of these studies are, most of these studies are actually derived from United States experience. Curry, for example, in 1996, is a study about the expansion of Medicaid coverage. And this study by Nguyen is actually also on the United States. And then while there's a growing body of literature, most of the studies actually report on increased utilization And the increase in utilization is sort of assumed to improve health and well-being, which is actually commonsensical. And we see that the first year of implementation of the Oregon Health Experiment, as reported by Finkelstein and company, showed that the insured had higher healthcare utilization, lower out-of-pocket expenditures, and medical debt. While Anderson, on the other hand, documented also that for people who have no insurance, it leads to a reduction of 40% in emergency department visits and a 61% reduction in inpatient hospital admissions. Interestingly, the same observations are being seen back home, where the poor essentially have, or 67% of poor households who reported falling ill did not seek any type of care. It's based on national data. And there are some studies also that used objective measures and estimated marginal effects on outcomes. And the findings are actually quite mixed at the moment, particularly because the effect of insurance on health outcomes may be driven by other factors. And a study in China showed that insurance was associated with better school enrollment, but surprisingly not necessarily lower mortality for young children and pregnant women. Of course, there are some methodological issues attached, and for those who are interested, you can look up these papers and study them closer as to what the limitations are given their findings. So as mentioned, the data presented from this study came from the Quality Improvement Demonstration Study. It's a randomized social experiment funded by the US NIH and implemented jointly by the University of the Philippines and the University of California at San Francisco. There were 6,000 children in the study, and they were divided or randomly assigned to three intervention groups. The access or zero copayment group, wherein if they're confined for conditions on diarrhea and pneumonia, they're not asked to pay anything. There's a bonus payment group where while they're covered by insurance, they're not necessarily protected from out-of-pocket costs, but their doctors are being assessed using clinical performance vignettes as a measure of quality. And of course, there's a control group where, you know, the usual thing in the Philippines would occur. And the subjects were followed up over a six-year period. In brief, this is the sampling frame. So the study lasted for 6 years. And when you look at the diagram closely, that would show you how study samples were allocated across treatment arms. These were the outcome measures that were documented. So we looked at physician vignette scores. We also looked at caseload, insurance coverage. We also asked them about their subjective health ratings, took health biomarkers, measured their height and weight ratios, as well as ran cognitive tests to test effects on cognition. For this particular paper, we divided the 6,000 children across income deciles based on the 2009 Family Income and Expenditure Survey. So we used the cutoff, income cutoffs of a national survey and applied it to this population. And we looked at their baseline health outcomes and then the effects of insurance coverage on selected outcomes. So the summary of findings from this study is that poverty has adverse effects on child health outcomes. Insurance potentially can protect against the effects of poverty on selected, not necessarily all, health outcomes. Eliminating copayment, the no copayment arm showed no significant effect on outcomes. And improved quality can reduce wasting by as much as 6 percentage points. I would have to give the caveat, though, that of the findings that are observed here, these are statistical findings, and some of them we cannot actually explain yet at the moment. For example, why there's no effect of copayments, or why quality can reduce wasting. We can't still tie up the specific physiological link between those findings. But we see the association between the two. So more than half of the children in the sample belong to the poorest decile. So when the study was done, it was run in 30 district hospitals in the Visayas region, which is relatively among the poorest regions in the country. And so it was not surprising that more than half of the children sampled actually fell into the poorest decile. The FIES cutoff would set the income cutoff at around 2,000 pesos monthly income for a family. That would be around $40, I think, here in the U.S. for a month. And the children in the poorest decile are, of course, less healthy compared to the rest. Their hemoglobins are low. They tend to be wasted as well as stunted. And an interesting finding is also that children born of less educated mothers, particularly those mothers that didn't finish high school, are sicker in terms of the health outcomes at baseline. And we saw that insurance is protective against poverty on selected health outcomes. Stunting and wasting is likely to be reduced by around 3 percentage points if the child belongs to an insured family. And the likelihood of low hemoglobin is also reduced by around 5 percentage points if the child is insured. And of course, insured children tend to have normal hemoglobin and anthropometrics as a converse of that. However, improving quality, we've observed, minimally reduces the likelihood of low hemoglobin, stunting, and wasting, barely less than a percentage point increase. And as I mentioned earlier, eliminating copayment did not show significant effect as far as the sample was concerned. Our other findings show that female and older children tend to have normal hemoglobin. Older children tend to be CRP positive and would likely be admitted for diarrhea and are also wasted and stunted. And those admitted for it's related. Those admitted for diarrhea are also likely to be CRP positive. And in converse to the earlier finding, children of better educated mothers, meaning those that reached high school and above, tend to have higher hemoglobins, are CRP negative, and have better anthropometric measurements. In conclusion, we say that insurance and higher quality of care can overcome the effects of poverty on selected health outcomes, and interventions that expand coverage and increase in quality are critical to improving child health, especially among the poor. Thank you. Okay. 2010. Yeah. Fairly recent. Yeah. The insurance coverage in the Philippines, we have a national health insurance law that was passed in 1995, and it mandated universal coverage, supposedly under a single payer system. But up until today, actually, we're still largely a mixed payment or a mixed payer system, with about 50% of health expenditure still out of pocket. So let me premise the insurance system on that observation, that the buying power or the market power of the national health insurance system is still quite low or small. Now, there's also different types of membership. There's membership for those that are employed, those that are self-paying or informally employed, and then there's a separate system for those who are poor, and the premiums are subsidized by the national government. Now, those under the sponsored program, as we call it, for the poor, have the following benefits. They have access to an outpatient package, which provides for consultations, but no outpatient medicines. That package also includes advice on family planning, but access to family planning commodities like condoms and contraceptive pills are supposed to be provided as a direct commodity supply by the public sector. But given the family planning situation in the Philippines, wherein for the past 10 years, before this administration, there was actually an anti-family planning position taken by national government, and as well as local governments vary across each other depending on their political persuasions and pressures from the local Catholic community. They also have access to an inpatient package, which was the subject for the study. And the inpatient package essentially covers any type of admissible condition except aesthetic procedures, etc. But the way insurance works is that they provide a cap on the benefits that you can get. So, for example, admission for pneumonia, as well as for other less intensive or catastrophic cases, as we would call, have a cap of 5,000 pesos or about $150 for medicine and diagnostics. So if you exhaust that either by the medication or by the laboratory tests done, insurance will not pay for anything on top of that. So there's a cap there. There's also a cap on professional fees. So if you're admitted in the public sector, technically that's not a problem because the doctors are salaried. But if you're admitted in a private hospital, you usually have a balance bill for the professional fees of the doctor. So since the study was done in district hospitals, essentially most of the co-payments came from purchase of medicine and supplies outside of the hospital. Given that most hospitals during 2006 lacked very little operating capital, they would tend to issue prescriptions and ask patients to go out and buy from nearby pharmacies or drugstores outside. That essentially erodes the insurance benefit for these children. And one of the intervention arm was to prevent that from happening, and that's the no co-payment arm of the study. The other one did not have a no co-payment policy, but we tested the doctors, administered clinical performance vignettes or paper-based tests, which were clinically validated in many studies to correlate with clinical quality. And we found that in hospitals where the doctors tend to score better, children had better outcomes, albeit quite minimally, not really that large.
Thank you. We're going to move on to the next.